Hi, I'm VOA's Alexis Strope with your worldwide news update. President Donald Trump signed a plan for reciprocal tariffs on U.S. trading partners. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Meghani reports.
President Trump has rolled out his plan for reciprocal tariffs on American trading partners, potentially triggering an economic confrontation with friends and foes alike. The president says it's simple. The tariffs will match tax rates other countries charge on American imports.
No more, no less.
He says it's about fairness.
No other country can complain.
And insists the tariffs will help cut U.S. trade imbalances and equalize the ability of both American and foreign manufacturers to compete, but they likely could backfire on the president. American consumers and businesses would likely have to pay the new taxes, either directly or through higher prices. Sagar Meghani, Washington.
Hamas signaled on Thursday that a crisis threatening to unravel the Gaza ceasefire deal could be avoided. Zachary Goldman from Reuters reports.
That deal appeared near to unraveling this week amid accusations of violations on both sides. Hamas on Thursday said it did not want the agreement to collapse, but it said it rejected what it called the, quote, language of threats and intimidation from Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and U.S. President Donald Trump. The Israeli and American warnings came after Hamas accused Israel of holding up an expected influx of aid deliveries and said it would not hand over three more hostages on Saturday until the issue was resolved. That prompted Netanyahu and Trump to warn the ceasefire should be canceled if the hostages were not freed. In a statement, Hamas said it, quote, reaffirms its commitment to implementing the agreement as signed, including the exchange of prisoners according to the specified timeline.
That was Reuters correspondent Zachary Goldman. This is VOA News. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., a vaccine critic who had pledged to tackle chronic disease, was named U.S. Healthcare Secretary on Thursday. Reuters correspondent Jillian Kitchener reports.
Kennedy, a longtime vaccine critic, will be overseeing agencies like the FDA and CDC. Only one Republican, former Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, voted against Kennedy's nomination, along with all 47 Democrats. In a bid to secure votes of hesitant lawmakers, Kennedy made pledges earlier this month to protect existing vaccination programs and honor decisions by the CDC's outside panel of experts. Kennedy says he wants to work to end chronic disease, break any ties between employees at the U.S. drug regulator and industry, and advise U.S. water systems to remove fluoride.
That was Reuters correspondent Jillian Kitchener. Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi said on Thursday the United States and India have set a target of doubling their bilateral trade to $500 billion by 2030. Modi made the comment at a press conference after a summit meeting with President Donald Trump in Washington. Modi said the U.S. and India would work together on artificial intelligence and semiconductors and focus on establishing strong supply chains for strategic minerals. Panama has received the first U.S. flight of deportees from multiple nations. AP correspondent Donna Warder reports.
Panamanian President José Raúl Mulino says 119 citizens of China, Uzbekistan, Pakistan, and Afghanistan arrived in Panama Wednesday on a U.S. Air Force flight after being deported from the U.S. Panama had offered to act as a stopover for migrants expelled from the U.S., and Wednesday's flight was the first of three planned flights, expected to total about 360 people. The migrants are expected to stay in a shelter in Panama's Darien region before being returned to their native countries. Last week, Secretary of State Marco Rubio traveled to Panama to discuss President Donald Trump's demands to retake control of the Panama Canal. But Mulino also discussed Panama's efforts to slow migration through the Darien Gap. And he said the U.S. could use Panama as a bridge to send U.S. deportees back to their countries. I'm Donna Warder.
Mexican President Claudia Sheinbaum says her government is not ruling out a civil lawsuit against Google if it maintains its stance of calling the stretch of sea between northeastern Mexico and the southeastern United States the Gulf of America. Sheinbaum, in her morning press conference on Thursday, said President Donald Trump's decree to change the name of the Gulf of Mexico is restricted to the continental shelf of the United States because Mexico still controls much of the body of water. She said, "We have sovereignty over our continental shelf." That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website. I'm Alexis Strope, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Today is Friday, February 14th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. A new report says the emergence of cheap artificial intelligence tools is leading to a wave of biometric fraud in Africa.
Dubi was a victim of biometric fraud, a type of criminal activity where someone copies another person's unique characteristics, like their voice or fingerprints, to impersonate them and gain access to their devices or financial accounts.
Protests take place as a landmark case against Nigerian oil giant Shell for oil spills in the Niger Delta gets underway in London. World Health Organization Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus urges the U.S. to consider resuming funding for life-saving aid. U.S. Democratic lawmakers says the Trump administration's freeze on U.S. foreign assistance might permanently damage America's security and standing abroad.
The Trump administration has granted waivers allowing some aid programs to resume, although Democratic senators questioned on Wednesday if this was happening on the ground.
And a global artificial intelligence race heats up after a conference in Paris. The stories, plus Samson O'Malley's sports, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A new report says the emergence of cheap artificial intelligence tools is leading to a wave of biometric fraud in Africa. The report says fraudsters are using AI to create fake accounts, voices, and images that facilitate identity theft and financial crimes. Mohamed Yusuf reports.
In July 2024, Japhet Ndubi, a Kenyan journalist, lost his phone and could not trace it. He replaced the SIM card, bought a new phone, and went on with his life. 4 days later, while on a lunch break, he received a text alerting him that he had sent money to a certain number.
Now I'm using a new phone. It's when I saw some money has been sent to a certain phone number. So I was surprised because I have my phone here. I called Safaricom to inquire how come I'm seeing that some money has been sent to a certain phone number without my authorization. So it's when they told me, but usually I know the one who has it done because we see the recent transaction of has been carried out, has been sent to this money. And we can see that we used their fingerprints to withdraw the money.
The fraudsters even took out a loan that took him months to pay off. Authorities never made an arrest, even though his phone was recovered. Ndubi was a victim of biometric fraud, a type of criminal activity where someone copies another person's unique characteristics, like their voice or fingerprints, to impersonate them and gain access to their devices or financial accounts. Smile ID is a US-based company with offices in Kenya that develops software to protect people's privacy. A report it released late last month says cases of document forgery and deepfakes are on the rise across Africa, as are simpler phishing attempts, all in an effort to steal money from innocent victims. The Smile ID researchers found that fraudsters especially targeted vulnerable people in low literacy regions through phishing, data breaches, and making purchases through illicit sources. Stolen data is then exploited to create fraudulent bank accounts to be used for money laundering operations. Joshua Kuma, a Ghanaian, received a fake text claiming that money had been transferred to his mobile bank account. The text led to him losing control of his account and SIM card.
The person told me to follow a short code that the money will be transferred back to him. So I did that without really paying attention to this, to the details. So by the time I realized it was too late. I had already given him all the access to my SIM card. So I had to report it so that SIM will be canceled. And so that wallet itself, yeah, I lost the money I had on my that SIM. So I had to start all over again.
Ndubi is still in shock at how his fingerprints were used to access money through his mobile phone. He says that has changed how he uses the device.
I was very surprised that they could be able to use fingerprints. I was very surprised, and I kept asking telecom, the provider, how they were able to access, but they were not able to tell me. So I even lost faith in the M-Pesa mobile banking. application. I've actually never used it.
To prevent fraud, authorities and businesses now sometimes insist that people present themselves physically and produce valid identification cards to prove their identities. As for average Kenyans, many are trying to avoid using mobile apps on their phones and are checking with banks and telecom operators about any transaction made in and out of their accounts. Mohammed Yusuf, VOA News, Nairobi.
A community leader from Nigeria says Shell should take responsibility for environmental damage in the country caused by oil spills. The comment was said at a pivotal hearing in lawsuits brought against the British oil company, which have begun at London's High Court. Rachel Graham of Reuters has details.
Protesters gathered outside London's High Court on Thursday said Shell should take responsibility for environmental pollution in Nigeria, as a pivotal hearing in lawsuits brought against the British oil major began. Thousands are suing Shell and its Nigerian subsidiary, SPDC, over oil spills in the Niger Delta, a region blighted by pollution, conflict and corruption related to the oil and gas industry. Godwin Babayokpabi, leader of the Ogale community in the Niger Delta, spoke outside the court.
Shell, Royal Dutch Shell, have polluted our land, destroyed our way of life, and the two basic rights that we are supposed to have, rights to live, to life, and then rights to a clean environment, they are saying we don't have it. And that's why we're here in the courts.
In Nigeria, hundreds of indigens barricaded a Shell manifold where a recent oil spill overflowed from a saver pit. Here's an Ogale community leader, Kagima Igwe Benjamin.
Our crops is not coming out. We don't have drinking water mostly. The underground water is seriously affected. Even when you dug a borehole now, you can't get the good water to drink. The whole of Ogale.
Decades of oil spills caused widespread environmental damage, destroying the livelihood of millions of communities near the Niger Delta and impacted their health. Shell, however, says the vast majority of spills were caused by illegal third-party interference, such as pipeline sabotage and theft. Shell's lawyers said in court filings that SPDC recognises it is obliged to compensate those harmed, even if it is not at fault. But Okpabi said Shell had made billions of dollars in Nigeria and had a moral responsibility to prevent and remediate oil spills.
That money is blood money.
Parts of the case began nearly a decade ago. In 2021, the UK's Supreme Court ruled that the case should be heard in the English courts. The lawsuit is the latest example of multinationals being sued in London for the acts of overseas subsidiaries.
That's Rachel Graham of Reuters, and a Nigerian analyst says the landmark court case in London against oil giant Shell and its Nigerian subsidiary for decades of alleged oil spills in the Niger Delta is an attempt by the affected communities to seek justice. Shell, however, says the vast majority of spills were caused by illegal third-party interference, such as pipeline sabotage and theft, which is rife in the region. Patrick Muyopugi, a lecturer at the River State University, told me that Shell needs to do a better job of responding to oil spills affecting the Niger Delta.
Sometime 8th of October of 2011, there was a spill of location 6, the Obibo North Ogale site of Shell. Now that is in Eneme Axis. And the matter was reported, and the Shell came in with a team, and they did their report on the 11th. Like 2 days after the incident. Now, the community went to the court and sued for damage. The matter went against Shell from the Court of Appeal. Shell went for impact assessment, and the Shell report claimed that the spill was actually not impacted on people's land or community land, but the community insisted that the spill went across to people's land, as the case may be.
Shell is insisting that it is not directly involved. It is claiming that a subsidiary should be held responsible and not the company itself.
Shell itself did evaluation. I have it. And it was even Shell that made the report and get all the data that I'm giving to you now. So there's no way Shell will say it is a subsidiary. It was location 6, a Shell facility. So the issue of whether his subsidiary is out of way, what she should do is to review his corporate relations unit. It is not just getting reports from site. How do you get feedback? How do you get yourself back to communities? So this thing will be addressed before, you know, it goes into litigation.
This case is being pursued by the community and not by the Nigerian government. Do you think this would affect the outcome in any way?
No, every man, every community has a right to file a suit, especially when his right is being affected. It doesn't mean that government need to get involved. My point is that share corporate relations outfits are not doing well to address some of these cases before they get to the court. It's due negligence. So these things could be settled out of court through ADRO.
Recently, the federal government announced that it wants to engage communities to restart some oil wells or even further exploration in these particular areas in the Ogoni communities. Do you think this latest incident will put a chill and would even make it more difficult for some communities to sign an agreement with the federal government to resume oil exploration?
I do not think so. The government under President Tinubu decided to maybe look at the issues that are lingered between the federal government and the Ogoni community. And what the president actually wanted was to have a broader dialogue system between Ogoni communities and government. Now, share exploration is a part of the discourse, but it's not actually the main thrust of a discussion. So that's why the communities were asked when they were invited by government to go home and reach out to every actor in their communities and discuss way forward of how government and the communities can be in one accord so that economic life of these communities can start.
Patrick Muyopugi, a lecturer at the River State University, speaking with me from Port Harcourt. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. Today is Friday, February 14th. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Still to come, Samson O'Malley's Sports. World Health Organization Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus says the United States' pause on foreign aid contributions is having a serious impact on global health, hitting programs fighting polio, HIV, and other threats. Tedros urged the U.S. to consider resuming aid funding until solutions can be found. In particular, Tedros said that the suspension of the funding for the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, known as PEPFAR, had caused an immediate stop to HIV treatment, testing and prevention services in the 50 countries it supports.
A significant part of WHO's response to health emergencies in Uganda, DRC, Gaza, Sudan, and elsewhere is supported by funding from the United States. As we have said, we regret the announcement that the United States intends to withdraw from WHO, and we would welcome the opportunity to engage in constructive dialogue. There are also actions that the U.S. government is taking that are unrelated to its intended withdrawal from WHO, but which we're concerned are having a serious impact on global health. For example, the suspension of funding to PEPFAR, the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, caused an immediate stop to HIV treatment, testing, and prevention services in the 50 countries that PEPFAR supports based on bilateral agreements. Although a waiver has been granted for life-saving services, it does not include prevention services for some of the most at-risk groups. Despite the waiver, clinics are shuttered and health workers have been put on leave. WHO is gathering data on service disruptions and supporting countries with mitigation measures, including by filling gaps in supplies of antiretrovirals. The sudden suspension of U.S. funding and the sudden disengagement of U.S. institutions is also affecting the response to global efforts to eradicate polio and the response to mpox epidemics in Africa. In Myanmar, almost 60,000 people, most of them women and children, have been left with no access to life-saving services. And we have limited information about the spread of avian influenza among dairy cattle in the U.S. or human cases. We ask the U.S. to consider continuing its funding at least until solutions can be found. We are asking share burden, the burden, and the U.S. is saying share the burden, so there is no difference at all. And we started this seven years ago. And if there are other issues they raise, we are building a transparent organization, an accountable organization, a responsive organization, and we would respond to any queries or issues there are, and we hope U.S. will reconsider and work with us to continue the reform that we have started seven.
That's World Health Organization Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus. U.S. Democratic lawmakers said the Trump administration's freeze on U.S. foreign assistance might permanently damage America's security and standing abroad. Republicans counter that a review of U.S. Agency for International Development programs is necessary to combat waste and fraud. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more.
Uncertainty around the world as the fate of U.S. foreign assistance programs is under review. Chris Coons is a Democratic senator.
We are losing decades of experience and insight, deep relationships, effective interventions in some of the most dangerous and distant places on Earth, and we are betraying partners who have risked their place in their communities and countries by publicly aligning with us.
Experts told lawmakers during a panel discussion Wednesday that foreign aid represents less than 1% of the total U.S. budget and pushed back against claims of wasteful spending. Jeremy Conendike is the president of Refugees International and a former USAID official.
USAID has been the target of a concerted campaign of disinformation led by Elon Musk and amplified by the president of the United States. They have deployed a fire hose of falsehoods to slander an agency whose mission is fundamental to advancing America's interests in the world.
Republicans have defended the work of the Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, led by billionaire Elon Musk, saying attempts to stop fraud and waste are long overdue. Republican Senator Lindsey Graham.
USAID is an agency that let us all down. I've been advocating for soft power for my entire time up here. And what I have seen makes me sick to my stomach.
The Trump administration has granted waivers allowing some aid programs to resume, although Democratic senators questioned on Wednesday if this was happening on the ground. In the Oval Office Tuesday, Musk said his work is following a clear process.
It's not us just going in and doing things willy-nilly. It's in partnership with the agency heads, and I check frequently with the president to make sure that this is what the president wants to have happen.
Development assistance supports more than 100,000 jobs in the United States. One of the thousands of USAID employees suddenly without work said the consequences of even a temporary stop to some U.S. assistance will be long-ranging.
We work not by forcing people to have respect for America or by telling people to have certain values, but by supporting them in the ways that they feel that they need.
U.S. contractors and non-governmental organizations are suing the Trump administration over the freezing of USAID funds, saying it is an unconstitutional use of presidential power. Republicans say Trump is simply exerting his authority. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
And it's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good
Friday morning to you too, Chinedu. We begin the sports with football. The road to the FIFA Under-20 World Cup qualification is set after the Confederation of African Football conducted the final draw for the CAF Under-20 Africa Cup of Nations Cote d'Ivoire 2025 on Thursday in Cairo. The tournament, set to take place from the 26th of April to the 18th of May 2025, will feature 13 teams competing for continental glory and four qualification spots for the FIFA Under-20 World Cup Chile 2025. In cricket news, Uganda Cricket Cranes delivered a brilliant performance, beating Hong Kong by 7-6 runs at the Kwolwan Cricket Club. The victory helped Uganda stay at the top of the ICC Men's Cricket World Cup Challenge League B standings and put them in a strong position. The win takes Uganda to 16 points, 4 ahead of Hong Kong. Uganda will now face Tanzania in their final game of the round, aiming to keep their unbeaten run going. Fred Achalam, Cricket Cranes wicketkeeper, says the team's performance at the series is nothing short of superb quality.
Nailing it against Hong Kong was a massive one for us, and it puts us in a very beautiful place, in a very good space to really come up into Tanzania, and with good thoughts and belief that we're coming in for the ODI.
And now to Lagos, Nigeria, where organizers of the 10th edition of the Lagos City Marathon are targeting a faster time of 2 hours, 10 minutes finish. The 42-kilometer and 10-kilometer race is set to take place on Saturday, the 15th of February, 2025, and has attracted over 100 elite runners so far. Technical director of the race and former Nigerian Olympian, Yusuf Ali, said the gold label category race is closer to achieving its platinum label category after the 10th anniversary.
There's no single platinum label in Africa, and I think if we can have a very clear finish and have a... Although we have the elite field that can give us the platinum label, and have our course record should be under 210. Right now we have 210. I think if we can go lower than 210, then we should be on course for the label.
And now to East Africa, where organizers of the 4th edition of the Sirikwa Classic Cross Country World Tour have announced an improved prize money for the event's winners. This year's edition, scheduled for Saturday, February 22nd, 2025, at the Lobo Village in Eldoret, will feature the highest prize money since the race inception. Unlike in previous editions, which rewarded only the top 8 athletes, this edition will see the top 15 going home with some prize money. And that does it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, Chinedu, in Washington.
Thank you very much, Samson, and have a great weekend. And that's all for this Friday, February 14th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for joining us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We're also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the entire Daybreak crew, I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington, wishing you a great weekend.
Has a wide variety of programs for you. News, lifestyle, health, politics, youth, women, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, television, and the internet on voaafrica.com.